past them, and you came out looking worked up.
Let go. And I'm not worked up, not really. If you'll excuse me, I have homework.
Nora. Patch spoke my name softly, yet with every intention of getting what he wanted.
I had a fight with Marcy Miller.
I had no idea where the confession came from. The last thing I wanted was to give Patch another window inside me.
Okay, I said, pushing a note of exasperation into my voice. Satisfied? Will you please let go now?
Marcy Miller? I tried to unlace my fingers, but Patch had a different idea.
You don't know Marcy, I said cynically. Hard to believe, considering you attend Coldwater High, for one, and you have a Y chromosome, for two.
Tell me about the fight, he said.
She called V fat.
And?
I called her an anorexic pig. Patch looked like he was trying not to crack a grin.
That's it? No punches, no biting, clawing, or hair pulling?
I narrowed a look at him.
Are we gonna have to teach you to fight, Angel?
I can fight. I tipped my chin up in spite of the lie. This time, he didn't bother restraining the grin. In fact, I've had boxing lessons.
Kickboxing, and at the gym, once.
Patch held out his hand as a target.
Give me a shot, hard as you can.
I'm not a fan of senseless violence.
We're all alone down here.
Patch's boots were flush with the toes of my shoes.
A guy like me could take advantage of a girl like you. Better show me what you've got.
I inched backward, and Patch's black motorcycle came into view.
Let me give you a ride, he offered.
I'll walk.
It's late and dark.
He had a point, whether or not I liked it. But inwardly, I was caught in a fierce game of tug-of-war. I'd been idiotic to walk home in the first place, and now I was stuck between two bad decisions. Ride with Patch, or risk the chance there was someone worse out there. I'm starting to think the only reason you keep offering me a ride is because you know how not fond I am of this thing. I blew out a jittery sigh, scrunched the helmet on, then swung on behind him. It wasn't entirely my fault that I was snuggled up close to him. The seat wasn't exactly spacious. Patch made a low sound of amusement.
I can think of a couple other reasons.
He sped down the straightaway out of the garage, gunning it toward the exit. A red and white striped traffic arm and an automatic ticket machine barred the exit. I was just wondering if Patch would slow long enough to feed money into the machine when he brought the bike to a smooth stop, jolting me even closer into him. He fed the machine, then floored the bike up onto the street above. Patch edged his bike up my driveway, and I held onto him to keep my balance while I climbed off. I handed back the helmet. Thanks for the ride, I said.
What are you doing Saturday night?
A moment's pause. I have a date with the usual. This appeared to spark his interest.
The usual?
Homework.
Cancel.
I was feeling a lot more relaxed. Patch was warm and solid, and he smelled fantastic. Like mint and rich, dark earth. Nobody had jumped out at us on the ride home, and all the windows on the lower level of the farmhouse glowed with light. For the first time all day, I felt safe. Except that Patch had cornered me in a dark tunnel, and was possibly stalking me. Maybe not so safe. I don't go out with strangers, I said.
Good thing I do. I'll pick you up at 5.
Chapter 17. There was cold rain all Saturday, and I sat near the window watching it pepper down on the growing puddles in the lawn. I had a dog-eared copy of Hamlet in my lap, a pen tucked behind my ear, and an empty mug of hot chocolate at my feet. The sheet of reading comprehension questions on the side table was just as white as it had been when Mrs. Lemon passed it out 2 days ago. Always a bad thing. My mom had left for yoga class almost 30 minutes ago, and while I'd practiced a few different ways of breaking the news of my date with Patch to her, in the end I'd let her walk out the door without vocalizing any of them. I told myself it was no big deal. I was 16 and could decide when and why I left the house. But the truth was, I should have told her I was going out. Perfect. Now I was going to be carting around my guilt all night. When the grandfather clock in the hall chimed to announce 4:30, I gladly tossed aside the book and jogged upstairs to my bedroom. I'd burned through most of the day with homework and chores, and that had kept my mind off tonight's date. But now that I was down to the final minutes, nervous anticipation overruled all. Whether or not I wanted to think about it, Patch and I had unfinished business. Our last kiss got cut short. Sooner or later, the kiss would need resolving. I had no doubt I wanted resolution. I just wasn't sure I was ready for it tonight. On top of all this, it didn't help that V's warning kept popping up like a red flag at the back of my mind. Stay away from Patch. I positioned myself in front of the bureau mirror and took inventory. Makeup was minimal, reserved to a sweep of mascara. Too much tumbleweed hair, but what else was new? Lips could use some gloss. I licked my bottom lip, giving it a wet shine. That got me thinking more about my almost kiss with Patch, and I got an involuntary rush of heat. If an almost kiss could do that, I wondered what a full-on kiss could do. My reflection smiled. No big deal, I told myself while trying on earrings. The first pair was big, loopy, and turquoise, and tried too hard. I put them aside and tried again with topaz teardrops. Better. I wondered what Patch had in mind. Dinner? A movie? It's a lot like a biology study date, I told my reflection nonchalantly. Only without the biology and studying. I tugged on matchstick jeans and ballet flats. I wrapped a Hallie blue silk scarf around my waist, up over my torso, then tied the ends behind my neck to fashion a halter-style blouse. I fluffed my hair, and there was a knock at the door. Coming! I hollered down the stairs. I did one final check in the hall mirror, then opened the front door and found two men in dark trench coats standing on the porch. Nora Gray, said Detective Basso, holding up his police badge. We meet again. It took a moment to find my voice. What are you doing here? He tipped his head sideways.
You remember my partner, Detective Holstyk? Mind if we step inside and ask you a few questions?
It didn't sound like he was asking permission. In fact, it sounded just this side of a threat. What's wrong? I asked, dividing a glance between them.
Is your mom home?
Detective Basso asked. She's at yoga. Why, what's going on? They wiped their feet and stepped inside.
Can you tell us what happened between you and Marcy Miller at the library Wednesday evening?
Detective Holstyk asked, plunking down on the sofa. Detective Basso remained standing, scrutinizing the family pictures arranged on the mantel. His words took a moment to register. The library, Wednesday evening. Marcy Miller. Is Marcy okay? I asked. It was no secret I didn't hold a warm, affectionate place in my heart for Marcy. But that didn't mean I wanted her in trouble, or worse, in danger. I especially didn't want her in trouble if it appeared to involve me. Detective Basso put his hands on his hips.
What makes you think she's not okay?
I didn't do anything to Marcy.
What were the two of you arguing about? Detective Holstyk asked. Library security told us things were getting heated.
It wasn't like that.
What was it like?
We called each other a few names, I said, hoping we could leave it at that.
What kind of names?
Stupid names, I said in retrospect.
I'm going to need to hear those names, Nora.
I called her an anorexic pig. My cheeks stung and my voice was humiliated. If the situation hadn't been so serious, I might have wished I'd invented something a lot more cruel and demeaning, not to mention something that made a little more sense. The detectives exchanged a look.
Did you threaten her? Asked Detective Holstyk.
No.
Where did you go after the library?
Home.
Did you follow Marcy?
No. Like I said, I came home. Are you going to tell me what happened to Marcy?
Can anyone vouch for that?
Detective Basso asked. My biology partner. He saw me at the library and offered me a ride. I had a shoulder propped against one side of the French doors leading into the room, and Detective Basso walked over and took up a post on the opposite side, across from me.
Let's hear about this biology partner.
What kind of question is that? He spread his hands.
It's a pretty basic question, but if you want me to get more specific, I can. When I was in high school, I only offered rides to girls I was interested in. Let's carry that a step further. What's your relationship with your bio partner outside the classroom?
You're joking, right? One side of Detective Basso's mouth hitched up.
That's what I thought. Did you have your boyfriend beat up Marcy Miller?
Marcy was beat up? He pushed up from the doorway and positioned himself directly in front of me, sharp eyes boring into me.
Did you want to show her what happens when girls like her don't keep their mouths shut? Did you think she deserved to get a little roughed up? I knew girls like Marcy when I went to school. They ask for it, don't they? Was Marcy asking for it, Nora? Someone beat her up pretty bad Wednesday night, and I think you know more than you're saying.
I was working hard to suppress my thoughts, afraid they might somehow show on my face. Maybe it was a coincidence that on the same night I complained to Patch about Marcy, she took a beating. Then again, maybe it wasn't.
We are going to need to talk to your boyfriend, Detective Holstiek said.
He's not my boyfriend. He's my biology partner.
Is he on his way here now?
I knew I should be up front, but on further reflection, I could not accept that Patch would hurt Marcy. Marcy wasn't the nicest person, and she'd acquired more than a handful of enemies. A few of those enemies might be capable of brutality, but Patch wasn't one of them. Senseless beating wasn't his style.
No, I said.
Detective Basso gave a stiff smile.
All dressed up for a Saturday night in?
Something like that, I said in the coldest tone I dared. Detective Holstiek pulled a small notepad out of his coat pocket, flipped it open, and clicked his pen.
We're going to need his name and number.
10 minutes after the detectives left, a black Jeep Commander rolled to the curb. Patch jogged through the rain to the porch, wearing dark jeans, boots, and a thermal gray t-shirt. New car? I asked after I opened the door. He gave me a mysterious smile.
I won it a couple nights ago, off a game of pool.
Someone bet their car?
He wasn't happy about it. I'm trying to stay clear of dark alleys for the next little while.
Did you hear about Marcy Miller? I threw it out there, hoping the question would take him by surprise.
No, what's up?
His answer came easily, and I decided it probably meant he was telling the truth. Unfortunately, when it came to telling lies, Patch didn't strike me as an amateur. Someone beat her up.
A shame.
Any idea who might have done it? If Patch heard the concern in my voice, he didn't show it. He leaned back against the porch railing and rubbed a hand thoughtfully across his jaw.
Nope.
I asked myself if I thought he was hiding something, but reading lies wasn't a strong point of mine. I didn't have a lot of experience. Typically, I hung around people I trusted. Typically. Patch parked the Jeep behind Bo's Arcade. When we got to the front of the line, the cashier laid eyes first on Patch, then on me. Back and forth they went, trying to make a connection.
What's up? Patch said, and put 3 tens on the counter.
The cashier trained his watchful stare on me. He'd noticed that I couldn't stop staring at the moldy green tattoos covering every available inch of skin on his forearms. He moved a wad of gum, tobacco, to the other side of his bottom lip and said,
You looking at something?
I like your tat... I began. He bared pointed dog teeth. I don't think he likes me, I whispered to Patch when we were a safe distance away.
Bo doesn't like anybody.
That's Bo, of Bo's Arcade?
That's Bo Jr. of Bo's Arcade. Bo Sr. died a few years ago.
How? I asked.
Bar brawl, downstairs.
I felt an overwhelming desire to run back to the Jeep and peel out of the lot.
Are we safe?
I asked. Patch slanted a look sideways.
Angel.
Just asking. Downstairs, the pool hall looked exactly like it had the first night I'd come. Cinderblock walls painted black, red felt pool tables at the center of the room. Poker tables scattered around the fringe, low track lighting curving across the ceiling. The congested smell of cigar smoke clogging the air. Patch chose the table farthest from the stairs. He retrieved 2 7-ups from the bar and popped their caps on the edge of the counter.
I've never played pool before, I confessed.
Choose a cue.
He motioned to the rack of pool sticks mounted on the wall. I lifted one down and carried it back to the pool table. Patch wiped a hand down his mouth to erase a smile.
What? I said.
Can't hit a home run in pool.
I nodded. No home runs. Got it. His smile stretched.
You're holding your cue like a bat.
I looked down at my hands. He was right. I was holding it like a bat. It feels comfortable this way.
He moved behind me, put his hands on my hips, and positioned me in front of the table. He slid his arms around me and took hold of the pool stick.
Like this, he said, repositioning my right hand up several inches. And this,
he went on, taking my left hand and forming a circle with my thumb and index finger. Then he planted my left hand on the pool table like a tripod. He pushed the tip of the pool stick through the circle and over the knuckle of my middle finger, bend at the waist. I leaned into the pool table, with Patch's breath warming my neck. He pulled back on the pool stick and it glided through the circle.
Which ball do you want to hit?
He asked, referring to the triangle of balls arranged at the far end of the table.
The yellow one in front's a good choice.
Red's my favorite color.
Red it is.
Patch drew the stick back and forth through the circle, aiming at the cue ball, practicing my stroke. I squinted at the cue ball, then at the triangle of balls farther down the table.
You're a tiny bit off, I said.
I felt him smile.
How much you want to bet?
$5. I felt him give a soft shake of his head.
Your jacket.
You want my jacket?
I want it off.
My arm jerked forward and the pool stick shot through my fingers, ramming the cue ball. In turn, the cue ball shot forward, impacted with the solid red, and shattered the triangle, balls ricocheting in all directions.
Okay, I said, shucking off my jean jacket.
Maybe I'm a little bit impressed. Patch examined my silk scarf slash halter. His eyes were as black as a midnight ocean, his expression contemplative.
Nice, he said.
Then he moved around the table, scrutinizing the layout of balls.
$5 says you can't sink the blue striped one, I said, selecting it purposely. It was shielded from the white cue ball by a mass of colorful balls. I don't want your money, Patch said.
Our eyes locked and the tiniest dimple surfaced in his cheek. My internal temperature rose another degree. What do you want? I asked.
Patch lowered his pool stick to the table, took one practice stroke, and drilled the cue ball.
The momentum of the cue ball transferred to the solid green, then to the eight ball, and punched the striped blue into a pocket. I gave a nervous laugh and tried to cover it up by cracking my knuckles, a bad habit I never succumbed to.
Okay, maybe I'm more than a little impressed.
Patch was still bent over the table, and he looked up at me. The look warmed my skin.
We never agreed on a bet, I said, resisting the urge to shift my weight.
The pool stick felt a little slick in my hands, and I discreetly wiped a hand on my thigh.
As if I wasn't already sweating enough, Patch said, You owe me. Someday, I'll come to collect.
I laughed, but it wasn't quite on pitch.
You wish.
Footsteps barreled down the stairs across the room. A tall, stringy guy with a hawk nose and shaggy blue-black hair appeared at the bottom. He looked at Patch first, then shifted his gaze to me. A slow grin appeared, and he strode over and tipped back my 7-Up, which I'd left on the rim of the pool table.
Excuse me, I believe that's... I began. You didn't tell me she was so soft on the eyes, he said to Patch, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand.
He spoke with a heavy Irish accent.
I didn't tell her how hard you are on them either, Patch returned,
his mouth at the relaxed stage just before a grin. The guy backed up against the pool table beside me and stuck his hand out sideways.
The name's Rickson, love, he told me.
I reluctantly slid my hand into his.
Nora. Am I interrupting something here?
Rickson said, dividing an inquiring look between me and Patch.
No,
I said, at the same time Patch said,
Yes.
Suddenly Rickson lunged playfully at Patch, and the two dropped to the floor, rolling and throwing punches. There was the sound of husky laughter, fists laying into flesh and fabric tearing, and Patch's bare back came into view. Two thick gashes ran the length of it. They started near his kidneys and ended at his shoulder blades, widening to form an upside-down V. The gashes were so grotesque I almost gasped in horror.
Oi, get off me!
Rickson bellowed. Patch swung off him, and as he got to his feet, his torn shirt fluttered open. He sloughed it off and tossed it into the trash can in the corner.
Give me your shirt, he told Rickson.
Rickson directed a wicked wink at me.
What do you think, Nora? Should we give him a shirt? Patch made a playful lunge forward, and Rickson's hands flew up to his shoulders.
"Easy now," he said, backing up.
He peeled off his sweatshirt and tossed it at Patch, revealing a fitted white tee underneath. As Patch rolled the sweatshirt down over abs hard enough to put a flutter in my stomach, Rickson turned to me.
"He told you how he got his nickname, didn't he?"
"Sorry?"
"Before our good friend Patch Hare got mixed up in pool, the lad favored Irish bare-knuckle boxing and wasn't very good at it."
Rickson wagged his head.
"Truth be told, he was downright pathetic. I spent most nights patching him up. And soon after, everyone started calling him Patch. Told him to give up boxing, but he wouldn't listen."
Patch caught my eye and passed me a gold medal bar fight grin. The grin alone was scary enough, but under the rough exterior, it held a note of desire. More than a note, actually. A whole symphony of desire. Patch tipped his head at the stairs and held his hand out to me.
"Let's get out of here," he said.
"Where are we going?" I asked, my stomach tumbling to my knees.
"You'll see."
As we ascended the stairs, Rickson called out to me,
"Good luck with that one, love."
Chapter 18. On the drive back, Patch took the Topsom exit and parked alongside the historic Topsom paper mill, sitting on the bank of the Androscoggin River. At one point, the mill had been used to turn tree pulp into paper. Now a big sign across the side of the building read, "Sea Dog Brewing Company." The river was wide and choppy, with mature trees shooting up on both sides. It was still raining hard, and night had settled down around us. I had to beat my mom home. I hadn't told her I was going out because, well, the honest truth was, Patch wasn't the kind of guy mothers smiled on. He was the kind of guy they changed the house locks for.
"Can we get takeout?" I asked.
Patch opened the driver's side door.
"Any requests?"
"A turkey sandwich, but no pickles. Oh, and no mayonnaise." I could tell I'd earned one of his smiles that never quite made it to the surface. I seemed to earn a lot of those. This time, I couldn't figure out what I'd said.
"I'll see what I can do," he said, sliding out.
Patch left the keys in the ignition and the heater pumping. For the first couple of minutes, I replayed our evening so far in my mind. And then it dawned on me that I was alone in Patch's Jeep, his private space. If I were Patch and I wanted to hide something highly secretive, I wouldn't hide it in my room, my school locker, or even my backpack, all of which could be confiscated or searched without warning. I'd hide it in my shiny black Jeep with a sophisticated alarm system. I unbuckled my seatbelt and rummaged through the stack of textbooks near my feet, feeling a mysterious smile creep to my mouth at the thought of uncovering one of Patch's secrets. I wasn't expecting to find anything in particular. I would have settled for the combination to his locker or his cell phone number. Towing around old school assignments cluttering the floor mats, I found a faded pine-scented air freshener, an AC/DC Highway to Hell CD, pencil stubs, and a receipt from the 7-Eleven dated Wednesday at 10:18 p.m. Nothing especially surprising or revealing. I popped open the glove compartment and sifted through the operating manual and other official documents. There was a gleam of chrome, and my fingertips brushed metal. I pulled out a steel flashlight and turned it on, but nothing happened. I unscrewed the bottom, thinking the flashlight felt a little light, and sure enough, there were no batteries. I wondered why Patch kept a non-working flashlight stored in his glove compartment. It was the last thought I had before my eyes homed in on the rusty liquid that had dried at one end of the flashlight. Blood. Very carefully, I returned the flashlight to the glove compartment and shut it out of sight. I told myself there were lots of things that would leave blood on a flashlight, like holding it with an injured hand, using it to push a dead animal to the side of the road, swinging it with force against a body repeatedly until it broke skin. With my heart thundering, I jumped on the first conclusion that presented itself. Patch had lied. He'd attacked Marcy. He'd dropped me off Wednesday evening, traded his motorcycle for the Jeep, and gone out looking for her. Or maybe their paths had intersected by chance, and he'd acted on impulse. Either way, Marcy was hurt, the police were involved, and Patch was guilty. Rationally, I knew it was a quick draw and a big leap, but emotionally, the stakes were too high to step back and think it over. Patch had a frightening past and many, many secrets. If brutal and senseless violence was one of them, I wasn't safe riding around alone with him. A flash of distant lightning brightened the horizon. Patch exited the restaurant and jogged across the parking lot, holding a brown bag in one hand and two sodas in the other. He went around to the driver's side and ducked inside the Jeep. He lifted his ball cap and scrubbed rain out of his hair. Dark waves flipped up everywhere. He handed me the brown bag.
One turkey sandwich, hold the mayo and pickles, and something to wash it down.
Did you attack Marcy Miller? I asked quietly. I want the truth. Now. Patch lowered his 7-Up from his mouth. His eyes sliced into mine.
What?
The flashlight in your glove compartment. Explain it.
You went through my glove compartment?
He didn't sound annoyed, but he didn't sound pleased either. The flashlight has dried blood on it. The police came to my house earlier. They think I'm involved. Marcy was attacked Wednesday night right after I told you how much I can't stand her. Patch gave a curt laugh, minus the humor.
You think I used the flashlight to beat up Marcy?
He reached behind his seat and dragged out a large gun. I screamed. He leaned over and sealed my mouth with his hand.
Paintball gun, he said.
His tone had chilled. I divided looks between the gun and Patch, feeling a lot of white showing around my eyes.
I played paintball earlier this week, he said. I thought we went over this.
That doesn't explain the blood on the flashlight.
Not blood, he said. Paint. We were playing capture the flag.
My eyes shifted back to the glove compartment storing the flashlight. The flashlight was the flag. A mix of relief, idiocy, and guilt at accusing Patch swam through me. Oh, I said lamely. I'm sorry. But it seemed a little too late for sorry. Patch stared straight ahead through the windshield, his breathing deep. I wondered if he was using the silence to let go of a little steam. I had just accused him of assault, after all. I felt terrible about it, but my mind was too rattled to come up with the right apology.
From your description of Marcy, it sounds like she's probably racked up a few enemies, he said.
I'm pretty sure V and I top the list, I said, trying to lighten the mood, but not entirely joking either. Patch pulled up to the farmhouse and killed the engine. His ball cap was low over his eyes, but now his mouth held the suggestion of a smile. His lips looked soft and smooth, and I was having a hard time averting my eyes. Most of all, I was grateful he seemed to have forgiven me.
We're going to have to work on your pool game, Angel, Patch said.
Speaking of pool, I cleared my throat. I'd like to know when and how you're going to collect on that thing I owe you.
Not tonight.
His eyes watched mine closely, judging my response. I was caught between an easing of my mind and disappointment, but mostly disappointment.
I have something for you, Patch said.
He reached under his seat and pulled out a white paper bag with red chili peppers printed across it. A to-go bag from the borderline. He set it between us. What's this for? I asked, peeking inside the bag, having absolutely no idea as to what might be inside.
Open it.
I pulled a brown cardboard box out of the to-go bag and lifted the lid. Inside was a snow globe with a miniature Delphic Seaport amusement park captured inside. Brass wires were bent roughly into a circle for the Ferris wheel and twisting loops for the roller coaster. Flat sheets of tarnished metal formed the magic carpet ride. It's beautiful, I said, a little astonished that Patch had thought of me, let alone gone to the trouble of buying me a present. Thank you. I mean it. I love it. He touched the curved glass.
There's the Archangel, before it was remodeled.
Behind the Ferris wheel, a thin wire ribboned to form the hills and valleys of the Archangel. An angel with broken wings stood at the highest point, bowing his head, gazing down without eyes. What really happened the night we rode it together? I asked.
You don't want to know.
If you tell me, you'll have to kill me? I half-joked.
We're not alone, Patch answered, looking through the windshield.
I glanced up and caught my mom standing in the open doorway. To my horror, she stepped out and walked toward the Jeep. Let me do all the talking, I said, stuffing the snow globe back in the box. Don't say a word, not one word. Patch hopped out and came around for my door. we met my mom halfway up the driveway.
I didn't know you were going out, she told me, smiling, but not in a relaxed way. It was a smile that said, we'll talk later.
It was sort of last minute, I explained.
I came home right after yoga, she said.
The rest was implied. Lucky for me, not so lucky for you. I'd been counting on her going out for smoothies with her friends after class. 9 times out of 10, she did. She turned her attention to Patch.
It's nice to finally meet you. Apparently my daughter's a big fan.
I opened my mouth to give an extremely concise introduction and send Patch on his way, but Mom beat me to it.
I'm Nora's mom, Blythe Gray.
This is Patch, I said, racking my brain for something to say that would bring the pleasantries to an abrupt halt. But the only things I could think of were screaming fire or faking a seizure. Somehow, both seemed more humiliating than braving a conversation between Patch and my mom.
Nora tells me you're a swimmer, Mom said.
I felt Patch shake with laughter beside me. A swimmer?
Are you on the school swim team, or is it a city league?
More recreational, said Patch, passing me a questioning glance.
Well, recreational is good too, Mom said. Where do you swim? The rec center?
I'm more of an outdoor guy. Rivers and lakes.
Isn't that cold? Asked Mom.
At my side, Patch jerked. I wondered what I'd missed. Nothing about the conversation seemed out of the ordinary, and I had to side with my mom on this one. Maine was not a warm, tropical place. Outdoor swimming was cold, even in the summertime. If Patch really was swimming outdoors, he was either crazy or he had a high pain threshold.
All right, I said, taking advantage of the lull. Patch needs to get going.
Go, I mouthed at him.
That's a very nice Jeep, Mom said. Did your parents buy it for you?
I got it myself.
You must have quite a job.
I bus tables at the borderline.
Patch was saying as little as possible, keeping himself carefully shadowed in mystery. I wondered what his life was like when he wasn't around me. At the way back of my mind, I couldn't stop thinking about his frightening past. Up until now, I'd fantasized about discovering his deep, dark secrets because I wanted to prove to myself and to Patch that I was capable of figuring him out. But now I wanted to know his secrets because they were a part of him. And despite the fact that I routinely tried to deny it, I felt something for him. The more time I spent with him, the more I knew the feelings weren't going away. Mom frowned.
I hope work doesn't get in the way of studying.
Personally, I don't believe high school students should work during the school year. You have enough on your plates already.
Patch smiled. It hasn't been a problem.
Mind if I ask your GPA? Mom said. Is that too rude?
Gee, it's getting late, I began loudly, consulting the watch I didn't wear. I couldn't believe my mom was being so uncool about this. It was a bad sign. It could only mean her first impression of Patch was worse than I'd feared. This wasn't an introduction, it was an interview.
2.2, Patch said.
My mom stared at him.
He's joking,
I said quickly. I gave Patch a discreet push in the direction of the Jeep. Patch has things to do, places to go, pool to play. I clamped a hand over my mouth.
Play?
My mom said, sounding confused.
Nora's referring to Beau's Arcade, Patch explained. But that's not where I'm headed. I've got a few errands to run.
I've never been to Beau's, she said.
It's not all that exciting, I said. You're not missing anything.
Wait, said Mom,
sounding a lot like a red flag had just sprung up in her memory.
Is it out on the coast, close to Delphic Seaport? Wasn't there a shootout at Beau's several years ago?
It's tamer than it used to be, Patch said.
I narrowed my eyes at him. He'd beaten me to the punch. I'd planned on outright lying about Beau's having any history of violence.
Would you like to come in for ice cream?
Mom asked, sounding flustered, caught between doing the polite thing and acting on the impulse to drag me inside and bolt the door.
We only have vanilla, she added to sour the deal. It's a few weeks old.
Patch shook his head.
I've got to get going. Maybe next time. It was nice meeting you, Blythe.
I took the break in conversation as my cue and pulled my mom toward the front door, relieved that the conversation hadn't been as bad as it could have been. Suddenly, Mom turned back.
What did you and Nora do tonight?
she asked Patch. Patch looked at me and raised his eyebrows ever so slightly.
We grabbed dinner in Topsom, I answered quickly. Sandwiches and sodas, purely harmless night.
The trouble was, my feelings for Patch weren't harmless. Chapter 19. I left the snow globe in its box and tucked it inside my closet behind a stack of Argyle sweaters I'd poached from my dad. When I'd opened the present in front of Patch, Delphic had looked shimmery and beautiful, light swirling rainbows from the wires. But alone in my bedroom, the amusement park looked haunted. A camp ideal for disembodied spirits. And I wasn't entirely sure there wasn't a hidden camera inside. After changing into a stretchy camisole and floral PJ pants, I called V.
Well, she said, how did it go? Obviously he didn't kill you, so that's a good start.
We played pool.
You hate pool.
He gave me a few pointers. Now that I know what I'm doing, it's not so bad.
I bet he could give you pointers in a few other areas of your life.
Normally, her comment might have incited at least a flush from me, but my mood was too serious. I was hard at work, thinking.
I know I've said this before, but Patch doesn't instill a deep sense of comfort in me, V said. I still have nightmares about the guy in the ski mask. In one of my nightmares, he ripped off his mask, and guess who was hiding under it? Patch. Personally, I think you should treat him like a loaded gun. Something about him isn't normal.
This was exactly what I wanted to talk about. What would cause someone to have a V-shaped scar on their back? I asked her. There was a moment of silence.
Freak! V choked. You saw him naked? Where did it happen? His jeep? His house?
Your bedroom? I did not see him naked. It was sort of an accident.
I've heard that excuse before, said V.
He had a huge upside-down V-shaped scar on his back. Isn't that a little weird?
Of course it's weird. But this is Patch we're talking about. He has a few screws loose. I'm going to take a wild guess and say, gang fight? Prison scars? Skid marks from a hit and run?
One half of my brain was keeping track of my conversation with V, but the other, more subconscious half, had strayed. My memory went back to the night Patch dared me to ride the Archangel. I recaptured the creepy and bizarre paintings on the side of the cars. I remembered the horned beasts ripping the wings off the angel. I remembered the black upside-down V where the angel's wings used to be. I almost dropped the phone.
Sorry, what?
I asked V when I realized she'd carried the conversation further and was waiting for my response.
What happened next? She repeated, enunciating each word. Earth to Nora. I need details. I'm dying here.
He got in a fight and his shirt ripped. End of story. There's no what happened next. V sucked in a breath.
This is what I'm talking about. The two of you are out together, and he gets in a fight? What's his problem? It's like he's more animal than human.
In my mind, I switched back and forth between the painting of the angel's scars and Patch's scars. Both scars had healed to the color of black licorice. Both ran from the shoulder blades to the kidneys, and both curved out as they traveled the length of the back. I told myself there was a good chance it was merely a very creepy coincidence that the paintings on the Archangel depicted Patch's scars perfectly. I told myself a lot of things could cause scars like Patch's. Gang fight, prison scars, skid marks. Just like V said. Unfortunately, all the excuses felt like lies. Like the truth was staring me in the face, but I wasn't brave enough to look back.
Was he an angel? V asked.
I snapped to myself. What?
Was he an angel, or did he live up to his bad boy image? Because honestly, I'm not buying this whole he didn't try anything version of the story.
V, I have to go. My voice was strewn with cobwebs.
I see how it is. You're going to hang up before I get the details on the big shebang.
Nothing happened on the date, and nothing happened after. My mom met us in the driveway.
Shut up!
I don't think she likes Patch.
You don't say, V said. Who'd have guessed?
I'll call you tomorrow, okay?
Sweet dreams, babe.
Fat chance, I thought. After I got off the phone with V, I walked down the hall to my mom's makeshift home office and booted up our vintage IBM. The room was small, with a pitched roof, more of a gable than a room. One greasy window with faded orange curtains from the 1970s looked out at the side yard. I could stand up to my full height in about 30% of the room. In the other 70%, the top of my hair brushed the exposed beams of the rafters. A single bare bulb hung there. 10 minutes later, the computer secured a dial-up connection to the internet, and I typed Angel Wing Scars into the Google search bar. I hovered with my finger above the enter key, afraid that if I went through with it, I'd have to admit I was actually considering the possibility that Patch was, well, not human. I hit enter and mouse-clicked on the first link before I could talk myself out of it. Fallen Angels, The Frightening Truth. At the creation of the Garden of Eden, heavenly angels were dispatched to Earth to watch over Adam and Eve. Soon, however, some angels set their sights on the world beyond the garden walls. They saw themselves as future rulers over the Earth's population, lusting after power, money, and even human women. Together, they tempted and convinced Eve to eat the forbidden fruit, opening the gates guarding Eden. As punishment for this grave sin and for deserting their duties, God stripped the angels' wings and banished them to Earth forever. I skimmed down a few paragraphs, my heart beating erratically. Fallen angels are the same evil spirits, or demons, described in the Bible as taking possession of human bodies. Fallen angels roam the earth looking for human bodies to harass and control. They tempt humans to do evil by communicating thoughts and images directly to their minds. If a fallen angel succeeds in turning a human toward evil, it can enter the human's body and influence his or her personality and actions. However, the possession of a human body by a fallen angel can take place only during the Hebrew month of Cheshvan. Cheshvan, known as the Bitter Month, is the only month without any Jewish holidays or fasts, making it an unholy month. Between new and full moons during Cheshvan, fallen angels invade human bodies in droves. My stare lingered on the computer monitor a few minutes after I finished reading. I had no thoughts. None. Just a complexity of emotions tangling inside me. Cold, panicky amazement and foreboding among them. An involuntary shudder roused me to my senses. I remembered the few times I was certain Patch had breached normal communication methods and whispered directly to my mind, just like the article claimed fallen angels could. Comparing this information with Patch's scars, was it possible? Could Patch be a fallen angel? Did he want to possess my body? I browsed quickly through the rest of the article, slowing when I read something even more bizarre. Fallen angels who have a sexual relationship with a human produce superhuman offspring called Nephilim. The Nephilim race is an evil and unnatural race and was never meant to inhabit Earth. Although many believe the Great Flood at the time of Noah was intended to cleanse the Earth of Nephilim, we have no way of knowing if this hybrid race died out and whether or not fallen angels have continued to reproduce with humans since that time. It seems logical that they would, which means the Nephilim race is likely on the Earth today. I pushed back from the desk. I crammed everything I'd read into a mental folder and filed it away, and stamped scary on the outside of the folder. I didn't want to think about it right now. I'd sort through it later. Maybe. My cell phone buzzed in my pocket and I jumped.
Did we decide avocados are green or yellow? V asked. I've already filled all my green fruit slots today, but if you tell me avocados are yellow, I'm in business.
Do you believe in superheroes?
After seeing Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man, yes. And then there's Christian Bale. Older, but killer hot. I'd let him rescue me from sword-wielding ninjas.
I'm being serious.
So am I.
When was the last time you went to church? I asked. I heard her pop a gum bubble.
Sunday.
Do you think the Bible is accurate? I mean, do you think it's real?
I think Pastor Calvin is hot. In a 40-something way. That pretty much sums up my religious conviction.
After I hung up, I went to my room and slid under the covers. I threw on an extra blanket to ward off the sudden chill. Whether the room was cold or the icy feeling originated inside me, I wasn't sure. Haunting words like fallen angel, human possession, and Nephilim danced me off to sleep.
Chapter 20. I tossed all night. The wind gusted through the open fields rimming the farmhouse, spraying debris against the windows. I woke several times, hearing shingles being pulled from the roof and tumbling over the edge. Every small noise, from the rattle of the window panes to my own creaking bed springs, had me jumping out of sleep. Around 6, I gave up, dragged myself out of bed, and padded down the hall for a hot shower. Next, I cleaned my room. My closet was looking slim, and sure enough, I filled the hamper with 3 loads of laundry. I was climbing the stairs with a fresh load when a knock sounded at the front door. I opened it to find Elliot standing on the doorstep. He wore jeans, a vintage plaid shirt rolled to the elbows, sunglasses, and a Red Sox cap. On the outside, he looked all American, but I knew better, and a jolt of nervous adrenaline confirmed it.
"Nora Gray," Elliot said in a patronizing voice.
He leaned in and grinned, and I caught the sour tang of alcohol on his breath.
"You've been causing me a lot of trouble lately."
"What are you doing here?" He peered behind me into the house.
"What's it look like I'm doing? I want to talk. Don't I get to come in?"
"My mom's asleep. I don't want to wake her."
"I've never met your mom."
Something about the way he said it made the hairs on the back of my neck stand tall.
"I'm sorry. Do you need something?"
His smile was half sloppy, half sneering.
"You don't like me, do you, Nora Gray?"
By way of answer, I folded my arms across my chest. He staggered back a step with his hand pressed to his heart.
"Ouch! I'm here, Nora, as a last-ditch effort to convince you that I'm an average guy and you can trust me. Don't let me down."
"Listen, Elliot, I have a few things I need to..." He drilled his fist into the house, smacking his knuckles against the siding hard enough to shake loose chipped paint.
"I'm not finished!" he slurred in a heated voice.
Suddenly, he tipped his head back and laughed quietly. He bent over and placed his bleeding hand between his knees and groaned.
$10 says I'm going to regret that later."
Elliot's presence made my skin crawl. I remembered back several days when I actually thought he was good-looking and charming. I wondered why I'd been such an idiot. I was contemplating closing the door and locking it when Elliot pulled off his sunglasses, revealing bloodshot eyes. He cleared his throat, his voice coming out straightforward.
"I came here because I wanted to tell you Jules is under a lot of stress at school. Exams, student government, scholarship applications, yada yada yada. He's not acting like himself. He needs to get away from it all for a few days. The 4 of us, Jules, me, you, V, should go camping for spring break. Leave tomorrow for Powderhorn and come back Tuesday afternoon. It'll give Jules a chance to decompress."
Every word that came out of his mouth sounded eerily and carefully rehearsed.
"Sorry, I already have plans."
"Let me change your mind. I'll plan the whole trip. I'll get the tents, the food. I'll show you what a great guy I am. I'll show you a good time."
"I think you should leave."
Elliot leaned his hand on the door jamb, bending toward me.
"Wrong answer."
For a fleeting moment, the glassy stupor in his eyes disappeared, something twisted and sinister eclipsing it. I involuntarily stepped back. I was almost positive Elliot had it in him to kill. I was almost positive Kirsten's death was on his hands. "Leave, or I'm calling a cab," I said. Elliot flung the screen door open so hard it smacked back against the house. He grabbed the front of my bathrobe and yanked me outside. Then he shoved me back against the siding and pinned me there with his body.
"You're coming camping whether you want to or not."
"Get off me," I said, twisting away from him.
Or what? What are you gonna do?
He had me by the shoulders now, and he knocked me back against the house again, rattling my teeth.
I'll call the police.
I had no idea how I said it so bravely. My breathing was rapid and shallow, my hands clammy.
Are you gonna shout for them? They can't hear you. The only way I'm letting you go is if you swear to go camping.
Nora?
Elliot and I both turned toward the front door, where my mom's voice carried out. Elliot kept his hands on me a moment longer, then made a disgusted noise and shoved me away. Halfway down the porch steps, he looked over his shoulder.
This isn't over.
I hurried inside and locked the door. My eyes started to burn. I dragged my back down the length of the door and sat on the entry rug, fighting the urge to sob. My mom appeared at the top of the stairs, cinching her robe at the waist.
Nora, what's wrong? Who was at the door?
I blinked my eyes dry in a hurry.
A guy from school.
I couldn't keep the waver out of my voice. I was already in enough trouble over my date with Patch. I knew my mom was planning to attend a wedding and reception tonight for the daughter of a friend from work. But if I told her Elliot had roughed me up, there was no way she'd go. And that was the last thing I wanted, because I needed to drive to Portland and investigate Elliot. Even a sliver of incriminating evidence might be enough to put him behind bars. And until that happened, I wouldn't feel safe. I sensed a certain violence escalating inside him, and I didn't want to see what would happen if it blew out of control. He wanted my Hamlet notes, I said flatly. Last week he cheated off my quiz, and apparently he's trying to make a habit of it.
Oh, honey.
She came down beside me, stroking my damp hair, which had chilled since my shower.
I can understand why you're upset. I can call his parents if you'd like.
I shook my head.
Then I'll make breakfast, Mom said. Go finish dressing. I'll have everything ready by the time you come down.
I was standing in front of my closet when my cell phone rang.
Did you hear? The four of us are going C-A-M-P-I-N-G for spring break, said V, sounding bizarrely cheerful.
V, I said, my voice trembling. Elliot's planning something. Something scary. The only reason he wants to go camping is so he can get us alone. We're not going.
What do you mean we're not going? This is a joke, right? I mean, we finally get to do something exciting over spring break, and you're saying no? You know my mom will never let me go alone. I'll do anything. Seriously, I'll do your homework for a week. Come on, Nora. One little word. Say it. It starts with the letter Y.
The hand holding my cell quivered, and I brought up my other hand to steady it. Elliot showed up at my house 15 minutes ago, drunk. He physically threatened me. She was quiet a moment.
What do you mean by physically threatened?
He dragged me out the front door and shoved me against the house.
But he was drunk, right?
Does it matter? I snapped.
Well, he has a lot going on. I mean, he was wrongly accused of being messed up in some girl's suicide, and he was forced to switch schools. If he hurt you, and I'm not justifying what he did, by the way, maybe he just needs counseling, you know?
If he hurt me?
He was wasted. Maybe he didn't know what he was doing. Tomorrow he's going to feel horrible.
I opened my mouth, shut it. I couldn't believe V was siding with Elliot. I have to go, I said curtly. I'll talk to you later.
Can I be completely honest, babe? I know you're worried about this guy in the ski mask. Don't hate me, but I think the only reason you're trying so hard to pin it on Elliot is because you don't want it to be Patch. You're rationalizing everything, and it's freaking me out.
I was speechless. Rationalizing? Patch didn't show up at my door this morning and slam me against my house.
You know what? I shouldn't have brought it up. Let's just drop it, okay?
Fine, I said stiffly.
So, what are you doing today?
I poked my head out the door, listening for my mom. The sound of a whisk scraping the side of a bowl carried up from the kitchen. Part of me didn't see the point in sharing anything else with V, but another part of me felt resentful and confrontational. She wanted to know my plans? Fine by me. It wasn't my problem if she didn't like them. I'm driving to Portland as soon as my mom leaves for a wedding at Old Orchard Beach. The wedding started at 4 p.m., and with the reception following, my mom wouldn't get home until 9 p.m. at the earliest, which gave me enough time to spend the evening in Portland and beat her home. Actually, I was wondering if maybe I could borrow the neon. I don't want my mom to see the miles I put on my car.
Oh, boy. You're going to spy on Elliot, aren't you? You're going to snoop around Kinghorn.
I'm going to do a little shopping and grab dinner, I said, sliding hangers down the rack in my closet. I pulled out a long-sleeved tissue tee, jeans, and a pink and white striped beanie I reserved for bad hair days and weekends.
And would grabbing dinner include stopping by a certain diner located a few blocks from Kinghorn Prep? A diner where Kirsten What's-Her-Name used to work?
That's not a bad idea, I said. Maybe I will.
And are you going to actually eat or just interrogate the workers?
I might ask a few questions. Do I get the neon or not?
Of course you do, she said. What are best friends for? I'll even come with you on this doomed little tromp. But first, you have to promise you'll go camping.
Never mind, I'll take the bus.
We'll talk about spring break later,
V called into the phone before I was able to disconnect. I'd been to Portland on several occasions, but I didn't know the city well. I stepped off the bus armed with my cell, a map, and my own inner compass. The buildings were red brick, tall and slender, blocking the setting sun, which blazed out from below a thick stretch of storm clouds, settling the streets under a canopy of shadow. The storefronts all had verandas and quaint signs extending over the doors. The streets were lit by black witch hat lamps. After several blocks, the congested streets opened up to a wooded area, and I saw a sign for Kinghorn Prep. A cathedral, steeple, and clock tower appeared above the treetops. I stayed on the sidewalk and rounded the corner onto 32nd Street. The harbor was only a few blocks away, and I caught glimpses of boats passing behind the shops as they came in to dock. Halfway down 32nd Street, I saw a sign for Blind Joe's Diner. I pulled my interview questions out and read them over one last time. The plan wasn't to look like I was holding an official interview. I hoped that if I casually broached the subject of Kirsten with the employees, I could tease out something the handful of reporters before me had somehow missed. Hoping the questions were stored to memory, I underhanded the list into the nearest trash can. The door chimed when I entered. The floor was yellow and white tile, and the booths were upholstered in nautical blue. Pictures of the harbor hung on the walls. I sat in a booth close to the door and shrugged out of my coat. A waitress in a stained white apron appeared beside me.
"Name's Whitney," she told me in a sour voice. "Welcome to Blind Joe's. Special today is the tuna fish sandwich. Soup of the day is lobster chowder."
Her pen was poised to take my order.
"Blind Joe's?" I frowned and tapped my chin. "Why does that name sound so familiar?"
"Don't you read the paper? We were in the news for a week straight last month. 15 minutes and all that."
"Oh," I said with sudden clarity. "Now I remember. There was a murder, right? Didn't the girl work here?"
"That would be Kirsten Halverson."
She clicked her pen impatiently.
"Want me to bring out a bowl of that chowder to start?"
I didn't want lobster chowder. In fact, I wasn't remotely hungry.
"That must have been hard. Were the two of you friends?"
"Hell no. You going to order or what? I'll let you in on a little secret. I don't work. I don't get paid. I don't get paid. I don't make rent."
Suddenly, I wished the waiter across the room were taking my order. He was short, bald back to his ears, and his body type mimicked the toothpicks in the dispenser at the end of the table. His eyes never reached higher than 3 feet off the ground. As pathetic as I would have felt after the fact, one friendly smile for me might have been enough to have him spilling Kirsten's entire life story.
"Sorry," I told Whitney. "I just can't stop thinking about the murder. Of course, it's probably old news to you. You must have had reporters in here all the time asking questions."
She gave me a pointed look.
"Need a few more minutes to look over the menu?"
Personally, I find reporters irritating. She leaned in, bracing a hand on the tabletop.
I find customers who take their own sweet time irritating.
I blew out a